Welcome to the Hot Ticket Podcast. This is episode 197. On this episode, we go old school again. We break down the Padron 1964 Anniversary Exclusivo Natural. Super excited to break this bad boy down. Hope you guys enjoy the episode. Let's get into it. All right, now let's begin.
Yay.
Here it is. Hello. All right. Here's the craziest news. We're breaking it here. Actually, it's probably broken somewhere else, but probably the first podcast to talk about it. I don't even know where it is. There it is.
The anticipation is palpable.
There you go. CDC lifts indoor mask guidance for vaccinated people. You can shed your mask. This guy, no mask.
Oh.
Woo! Oh. Did you also happen to see that Mike DeWine is basically giving away millions of dollars for people to get vaccinated in Ohio?
No.
So there's five potential $1 million winners. So if you can show proof of vaccination, that you can enter in this chance to win $1 million is sent essentially a lottery. But the price of admission is just proof that you've gotten your vaccination. Five winners will win $1 million. If you are under the age of 18, you will get a scholarship to a university. That's what they're doing in Ohio to entice people to get the vaccination.
That's something else.
It's a little wild, isn't it?
It is. It's like a game.
It is like a game. Dude, I'm telling you, shit's weird. Dude, it's weird right now. It's fucking weirder than it's ever been. But it's nice to see CDC lifts indoor mask guidance. I'm wondering if I decide to go out in public, because I've been so used to wearing a mask, right? If I go into public today, is somebody going to say something? And at what point does this information get disseminated? CDC is saying, which is the governing body from a federal perspective, is saying this. So if I walk into a place, so I'd be like, yeah, just look it up, dude. Yahoo News broke it. CDC says no indoor masks. I've got my card in my wallet. It says I got the vaccine. No more masks anymore. Cool. Done and done. I wonder if other organizations, like how quickly it'll take for them to catch on.
I like how it's a status symbol now. So if you still wear a mask, people are still going to look at you like you're the fucking crazy person.
It is. Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's you.
That's me.
So why haven't you got that vax, bro?
Concerns about the implications of it on people.
On getting the vaccination, isn't the bigger concern on what COVID can do to potentially other people? Are you one of those weird conspiracy theorists?
No, I'm not quite a conspiracy theorist, but it's so bizarre the way it's been publicized as far as getting the vaccine and the positive light shed on it. Like, I watched this video that UNICEF put out where they're talking to like some little Indian kid, and it's like trying to talk about like the four ways that how to talk about the benefits or what the vaccine means and like the benefits of it. I start off with this little Indian boy, and he's like so overly energetic, and you could tell it's so scripted the way he's responding.
Of course.
Then I'm just like, oh God, it's so cringy. But anyways, and then the last person they talked to was actually like a biologist or like some
an epidemiologist.
Yeah. But so I patiently want to wait to see the implications of this long term. Just like anything that goes through trials, and while there was trials, there's still a lot of skepticism around its implications on pregnant women, which they're trying to validate or invalidate.
Okay, so hold on. Pause real quick. Why are you concerned about pregnant women?
Well, there's more to it than just like pregnant women.
You are not a woman, nor is anyone in your life pregnant right now, and nor can you impregnate anyone anymore. Yeah, continue.
But the implications on kids still, there's been articles that were censorship and polled that reflect concerns that the vaccinated people were affecting their families through the spike proteins that was causing like sudden deaths and family members, especially little babies. issues with reproductive issues for men and females.
Again, nothing you have to worry about at this point. Continue.
Weird blood clotting issues.
Females only. Continue. I'm sorry, but there's a counter argument to every argument, so I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah. But if I get it, the fear that passes on to my children is real enough that I want to wait to see validated or invalidated the long-term studies of the effects of the spike proteins and what the vaccine actually has in it before just jumping to get it. So
what's interesting enough about it though is like it's not even a vaccine. It's crazy to me that they call it a vaccine.
They call it a vaccine.
A polio vaccine is a vaccine, right? Eradication of a particular virus as a whole is a vaccine. This is essentially as they're treating it. Did you hear Carlisle?
Yeah, he's
he's awake. He's probably hungry. Anyway, so they had, you know, they've been calling it a vaccine, but the reality is it's just like the flu shot, right? Flu shot you have to get every year. A vaccine you get one time. There are, you know, for like tetanus, there's like boosters and things like that, right? Which they're essentially stating that like with the Pfizer, I haven't really heard anything about Johnson & Johnson or Moderna, but like for Pfizer, they're already developing a booster shot.
Yeah.
So it isn't really even a vaccine. Not that is any, you know, it doesn't really relate anything to what you're saying as far as like implications that it may have on you. I get where you're coming from. Honestly, I wouldn't have gotten it if it weren't for other scenarios and situations in my life. Like, you know, travel is one, have a newborn nephew who like I wasn't going to be able to see because Aaron works in a hospital. I'm not going to be able to see unless I get a vaccine. You know what I mean? Like there's certain, and I'm not going to not see, you know, family members as a result of that. So it was like one of those things where, although if I had the choice, given how I lived my life, I definitely would not have gotten it. But there's, you know, certain situations in my life where I'm like, I'm going to make that sacrifice, even if I don't believe in necessarily its impact.
Yeah.
Why are you whining?
Yeah, for sure. And so mine is basically weighing the risks of the double-edged sword.
Yeah. I get it.
And so I can immediately put myself into the risks of whatever the shot can give an individual and pass on to others, which there's a lot of skepticism around, right? So it's like, whose side do you believe outside of just being as informed as you can about the implications of not having it and having it? Or not take it, right? And understand the risks of it possibly still getting it through transmission of being around people that have COVID that don't realize they have COVID, right? Thankfully, I'm in a situation where I'm very limited with the people I have contact with outside of Kale, who goes to an after-school program where they constantly monitor kids and whatnot, which still is a risk. Don't get me wrong.
Kids with like sticky ass hands. You're probably more apt to get like some nasty common cold from those little fucking dirty butts.
Yeah. So whether I'm forced to take it or not in the future, which looks like that's a potential, you know, where they'll be like, you have to get it.
Well, that would be strange.
Find you on your taxes.
Yeah. What's strange to me is like, so I always get terrified about the government ruling of it. That's the thing that scares me the most. When you give people the ability to make an informed decision themselves, I'm going to have to let him out in a second.
You're fine.
When you give people the ability to make an informed decision around whether or not they should, and it fits into their lifestyle, that's one thing. When you force it based upon regulatory process, like for example, it all starts subtly, like, oh, you can't go to this establishment if you don't have your vaccine. Forget the whole mask thing. But like, let's say, well, you're not allowed to go out in public and go to these places. That's government overreach. And then it kind of curtails into like, well, then you can't get on an airplane. You can't fly to travel, which means you can't do your job. Or even beyond that, it is like you said, there's even further implications, like you're going to be penalized or you're going to go to prison. It's like, how far do those reaches go, you know, for that government control? Because this is not an unknown thing in the government. Again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but there are particular parts of the government, and it's happened over a long period of time. They create an issue, and then they come to your aid to solve it. That's a problem. That's a real problem. That's how governments get power. It's like, we're going to create this issue, but then we're going to solve it for you because you need us. And that's kind of a scary thing. And I think there's a lot of that. There's components of that even with what's going on with COVID-19. Conspiracy theory, like, you can take that all out. This is a real thing that has happened in government over a very, very, very long period of time in many governments and many countries for thousands and thousands of years. So to say that it can't occur, it won't occur, or there's not an element of it now is just ridiculous, because we've seen it in history so many times. So I get where you're coming from. I was just playing devil's advocate. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'll be the one in the caboose on the train. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, you'd be like the peasants in the back, just all like coughing on each other and shit. I always think, like, what if it got to the point where it was like, you know, cause everyone's carrying these cards, and this card is the proof that you got it. It's almost like if you don't and you're the one wearing a mask, it reminds me, like, not that I lived through this time, but just like as many documentaries as I've watched, you know, World War One, World War Two, Jews in Poland, Polish people in general, Czechoslovakia, or like French Jews, like they are branded and labeled with certain things that suggest you are not German and thus you are less than. Like, I wonder if there's going to be like a weird element of that. Like, you wear a mask and it's just like, you know, you got to use this bathroom, or you got to do this thing, or you're sequestered and you can't sit at the front of the bar. You can't do all this stuff. Like, you just wonder, like, is there going to be that? Like, is there the potential for that? Or is that like not going to exist in the US? I imagine other countries it may. Here it's, I don't know. We'll see.
I'm waiting for that mob mentality where you go into the store with a mask on and
get him. There's
people that see him and like, don't let him leave the fucking store. Start throwing shit and saying hateful shit. Like,
yeah,
people are like that though, man. It's possible.
You never know. You never know. There's the, I mean, at the beginning of this, there was the opposite side of that. So people who didn't wear masks, they know were like, you know, they were kind of condemned and damned. It's like people walking the grocery store with a mask on and everyone's fucking yelling at them. It's like, you're a piece of shit. You don't care about anybody's health but yours. And the person's just like, dude, I'm just here to fucking buy a pack of gum. Like, what the fuck?
Listen, I've come in here 4 days straight looking for toilet paper, and it's always out. Like, I'm just, can't even wipe my own ass right now. Just let me get toilet paper.
Yeah. It's weird, man. It's weird times. Strangest times we've definitely ever lived in. You and I, for sure. It's the weirdest time we'll ever live in. I can't, if it gets weirder than this, that's just called the apocalypse, and shit's going to end anyway. So, fuck it.
Very true.
Yeah, it's a strange world. Anyway, so TPE is this week, and I've been monitoring it closely, and it looks like everybody's fatter. It's kind of what I've gotten out of the whole thing, is that everybody looks bloated. And it doesn't seem... It seems like the attendance is good, and I was thinking about this earlier in terms of, you know, we were talking with Matt Booth about the impact of events and getting back on the road and what that does for a brand overall. It's just been a long, it's been something that is so, I mean, it's part of like the culture and DNA of this industry is like those types of events, right? In-house B&M events and so on. Everybody does them. But everyone's been hesitant, right? There's just, and obviously this mask lift, this is like a huge step in the right direction, getting those back open. But I think TPE also represents the opportunity for the rest of the industry to kind of get back to some normalcy, because people have been doing virtual stuff, and it's like, what kind of impact that does have? And it wears on you, you know, like it's just like even me just being on Zoom all the time, like I'm on probably anywhere from 8 to 12 calls a day. Like through Zoom. Those 8 to 10 calls don't have the same impact it would have if I was traveling to see a customer in person, let's say 2 or 3 times a day. It just doesn't have the same impact. So you like really burn yourself out doing that. Like even you think about the impact and the return that you get, although hard to attach to a specific number, you understand that it just doesn't have the same level of impact. So it'll be interesting to see if TPE opens up the opportunity for all these B&Ms to be more comfortable with, hey, let's start opening up events again, and let's do events here, let's do events here, let's start scheduling stuff. You're starting to see concerts pop back up. Lauren just bought tickets to a concert in October. There's concerts that are coming live here in the Cincinnati area starting in like August, September. So there's a lot of things that are happening, but you wonder if like, okay, everybody leaves TPE and then everybody just fucking gets COVID. You know what I mean? Like, and I also don't know, you know, what were the rules to get in? Like, if you're vaccinated, do you have to wear a mask? I assume not. But like, you know, is this going to usher in a more comfort thought process of people doing those in-person events going forward? Or are we just going to kind of remain status quo for now? Like, who's going to be the first one to be like, we're going to do it. Let's do it.
I'm waiting for that point where it gets so strict, where it's like Maroon 5 is performing this week, and if you're vaxxed, you don't have to wear a mask. If you're not vaxxed, you have to wear a mask. And then Maroon 5 gets up there about to get on stage, and they're like, hey, wait, before you get on stage, have you been vaxxed? And they go like, no, well, you're going to have to wear your mask. But
sing through your
how
mouth.
Am I going to sing into the mic?
And like, he just sounds like a you problem.
He goes up there fucking singing through a mic or singing through a mask. And it's all muffled. And people like, we can't hear you. Like, I'm waiting until gets that strict where no one has any exception to the rule if you're not vaxxed. Like, gotta wear a mask everywhere. Are you going to bed? Gotta wear your mask.
What I think's interesting is like, excuse me. I just saw a thing where Fauci said the other day that masks will end up being like a seasonal thing, right? And you would argue like, okay, well, what are the most impactful seasons to wear masks? Well, they would be the seasons of which more people are exposed to one another, which would be spring and summertime. 2 days later, the CDC goes, no more masks inside. It's like, are you guys talking to each other or like, how does that work?
That's true.
It's such a strange thing. Yeah. Then you relinquish a lot of powers to the state, which should be a thing. States should be able to decide what they do. Obviously, Texas and Florida, Tennessee lifted their mask ban a couple weeks ago. Florida's just been going rogue this entire time. I think it's better to keep power at the state and even at the municipal level than I do federal. Federal oversight scares the living shit out of me. Especially this administration. Ooh, zinger. It's I don't know. I'm wanting to get back to cigar events just even as a, you know, as a consumer. You know, never mind the fact that it's like we do, you know, some of the media stuff, but like as a consumer, I just want to like go back and I want to sit in a lounge and hang and, you know, go to an event and have fun, you know, like what we used to do. And it's just, we haven't had the ability to do that in a very, very long time. No. So
yeah, it's true.
I'm hoping like Crown Heads is like road shows back. And, you know, it's like Miguel will just flood, you know, all of the locations in Ohio over the next 2 months. You know, I hope that occurs, but we'll see.
Yeah. I was in a team meeting today and it was crazy when I was the first one, like it was like personal update time. And so a lot of people don't know what's happened in my life, but I share it with close people. And funny enough, I find my colleagues very close friends in a lot of ways because we're a small, passionate team of people. And it was like update time, like what's going on in your personal life type thing. And I like spilled the beans for anybody who hadn't heard it yet. And they're like, oh shit, that's crazy, all the stuff you've gone through. And then everybody else opened up about their personal lives. And I swear to you, there is so much in common about what has happened in my life, like going through a separation, dealing with kid issues, relationship troubles, and lack of connection because you're just confined in the same space. You think that'd be good. You think you'd have a stronger connection. No.
It's tough.
No, it's way tough.
It's really tough.
Like issues with schooling for all the kids, like some of them are considering divorce. Like,
yeah.
And some of them already have broken up with their significant other and moving back to their original states. I'm like, this is fucking just crazy.
Yeah.
How much this shit has impacted people's lives.
Yeah. I think you begin to like understand that. Well, one, it's think about it. It's what we have been as a nation forced to do over the period of year goes against who we are inherently as social creatures. Right. So that confinement, you think about, you know, I think about it, and this is, you know, I reflect back on to more than a year now, right? It's been more than a year. And, you know, Lauren and I both knew that it's like, we have to keep things fresh and we have to keep things moving. We have to appreciate one another and we have to remain strong together. But then like, also we need to find ways to continue doing the things that we want to do individually. Cause that's what has made our relationship so strong over the course of 10 plus years. And it's hard to do that during that time, right? It's especially hard during that time when you're also like, let's get two puppies. Like, no shit. You know what I mean? Because then you're always together, but it's like you have to extend yourself, but just beyond just that weird complacency and that, I mean, because it's not that it's necessarily toxic, but it just gets to the point where it almost just becomes draining. You know, one of my favorite things about traveling for work was when I traveled, I got the ability while I was gone to miss the things I had at home. Yeah. And when you miss things at home, you begin to appreciate them much more. You take them less for granted, right? Like I would come home and like after a couple of days on the road, I'm like, I'm ready to get home and see my dogs and see my wife and hang out and have fun and do the things that I love to do. When you're in that every single day, you don't get a chance to miss anything. And I think sometimes there's a lack of appreciation, you know, for what you do have. And it's like, you got to work hard to keep those things fresh. I think with kids, it's much more of a challenge, way more taxing for people. I would argue that if like there's any separations or divorces as an outcome of just this long period of quarantine, it's going to be couples with kids. Arguably, definitely more couples and kids than couples that are, you know, solo.
One of the things that popped up that was like unanimously across all of us that had kids, it was like, because your kids are at home, there's no time to be adults and have good discussions with your significant other or plan a date night or anything, because the kids are there 24/7.
And even when the kids go to sleep, right, then there's like the exhaustion that sets in, right? You've spent your entire day working, keeping your kids in line, you know, helping out with schoolwork, but also maintaining a household, which takes two people. It's like by the time you have any alone time, you just want to pass out and go to sleep. And then rinse and repeat, right, for over 365 days, arguably closer to, you know, 450 days at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a struggle. That would be rough.
Therapeutic. In a lot of ways, but still just sad. Like, it's super sad.
Yeah. It's tough to see, because like you think about, and I get that like no one's on an island alone. Like there's a lot of people dealing with it. But you think about, you rehash these situations or begin to discover like what other people are going through, and you're just like, fuck, like this is what it's come to. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think we've yet to see the long-term repercussions for, you know, for anybody who went through an entire year and like really just quarantined, you know what I mean? Like limiting their access to the outside world. Especially kids, like we have yet to see the impact on kids. Like you'll see it. There's probably like, you know, kids from 5 to 12 years old right now, 13 years old in that range that you're going to see down the road. And you're going to go, well, why did little Johnny, why does he have anger issues? And why does he keep beating up kids at school? And then you're going to go like, fucking quarantine.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, think of all the kids who just had, you know, effects beyond illness and sick. I mean, kids are relatively unaffected by the COVID-19 virus, but think about all the shit that they had to deal with. I think about Kale, like the ability not to make friends or go to school and all that. It's like, yeah, there's an adverse impact to that for sure. Some kids, it'll probably affect less, and some kids it'll really affect harshly. So
yeah.
It's weird. And you got all those little fuckers playing their video games all day. Spend some time outside. Play basketball, play in the dirt like we used to do. Yeah. Do you remember dad used to say that? Like, what did he used to say? Like, you know, I'd be outside and play in the fucking pig pen or whatever. Like, he used to say the dumbest shit. It's like,
yeah.
Well, the times have changed. I feel good about, like, I think we had a good childhood period, you and I did. You played video games more than I did, but it didn't consume your world. It was like you would play video games, but then also if friends came over and we went to do it, you'd be like, all right, done with the video games, turn it off, and like we'll go outside and do shit. You know, like just hood rat stuff. Dude, there's not a lot of kids that do that shit anymore, which is weird to me. Like, I remember it was like when friends came over, you stopped everything you were doing and you went and fucking hung out with your friends.
Yep.
Like, video games did not consume our world when we were younger. It's like if like we all collectively decided we wanted to play something, we would get in deep to it. But it's like it didn't consume our worlds. We did a bunch of other shit outside, you know, even when we were older teenagers driving around, just doing dumb shit. It's like, does anyone do that anymore? Like, kids don't even want to get their driver's license anymore. They just want to Uber everywhere. I'm like, what the fuck? How are you going to Uber to TP someone's house? It's like, where are you kids going? Oh, this really dark neighbor. It's dark neighborhood where there's no lights. Drop us off here. Is there anyone home? Doesn't matter. Shut up. You've just got like a bundle of fucking toilet paper in your arms. hey, I noticed you were driving a Prius Uber driver. How much room do you have in the trunk? We've got about, we have four 24 packs of toilet paper we need to stuff in there. Yeah, dude, it's weird. So it's fucking strange, man. So strange. There's a lot that we're going to learn over the next 5 years about everything that's happened over the course of the last year. That's what's weird. I mean, there's going to be studies done. There's already documentaries. There's already movies being made. Like, it's what the shit is freaky. It's wild. And then I wonder, see, like, how much the federal government's going to really kind of hold on to this thing. Because at one time, it was global warming. It's not global warming anymore. This is like, this is your Trojan horse right now is COVID. And it's like, how long are you going to pull the strings of COVID-19 until people just call you on your bullshit? Which is, that's happening more and more every day. Like, people are just like, you know what? I'm not going to wear a mask in public. So suck my dick.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
I'm waiting for vaccine cards being forged.
Oh, dude, which cannot be that difficult. I mean, I took a picture of mine on my phone, and then I was thinking to myself, like, well, what if they don't accept pictures? Like, because here's the thing. It's just a little card. Like, mine's in my wallet. Hang tight real quick. And it's, like, all bent up and shit because I had to just, like, stuff it in here, you know?
Like a Social Security card.
Yeah, look, it's, like, it's just a fucking, it's a paper card. That's all it is. It's just, it's a piece of fucking paper. Like, you could easily, like, I'm sure I could print this off online right now and just take a picture of it and then just, you know, put my signature, scan it in, and go, yep, I got my vaccine. Like, this isn't exactly a fucking, I don't know, maybe it's this, the Johnson & Johnson sticker on it.
What'll end up happening is they'll stop doing it that way and they'll put it on your driver's license. You watch.
Oh, now that would be creepy. That would be creepy. And then you get pulled over by a cop. When you're
an organ donor, it's also going to show that you were a vaxxer.
And then you get pulled over by a cop and they're like, so you don't have your vaccine. You know, I got to write you a ticket for an extra $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
You non-vaxxer piece of shit. And then you get tased in the fucking neck. And then shit hits the fan after that.
Yep.
Anywho. All right. Enough of that. Not that it was. It's not like everything we just talked about was super negative, but we should probably get into a cigar review. Chris, we have a cigar review today.
Oh, we smoking that COVID?
Smoking that. Dude. Who's going to make the first COVID? Oh,
no shit.
The C-19. We should do it. Oh, fuck. Why didn't we do that?
Oh, man. It could have been clever.
Or we just call it the COVID killer.
Ooh.
Or we just call it Vax. C-Vax. Dude, that would be dope. Why did we not do that? Dude, those would sell like hotcakes. No one steal our fucking idea. If I swear to God, if I see this on the fucking market in like the next month, I'm going to beat the shit out of someone. We should call it C-Vax, dude. Let's do it. I got some people to call after this. All right, so we do have a review today. Chris and I, we have really been kind of like going back into the archives recently, doing some old school stuff. I just actually reviewed yesterday, which will be available on the website hopefully in the next couple weeks, the Don Pepin Garcia Blue, the original. It's like, I smoked that cigar pretty frequently, but never reviewed it. And I was just like, I want to fucking review it. I'm just like going back into the archives, like some of these really good, because we've been smoking a lot of new school stuff recently. I mean, for an extended period of time, right? And it's kind of cool just because we're in a little bit of a lull with people coming out with new releases right now. That's like, I kind of want to get back to some of the old school stuff. Like, where did it all begin? Like some of the tried and true.
This is like going back to the 80s in the discovery and the emergence of rap, dude. Like, you gotta start with the roots, man. The OGs, like, you gotta...
Did you watch that Netflix documentary?
No.
Dude, there's a Netflix documentary called The History of Hip Hop, and it is fucking phenomenal.
I bet.
Like, legit one of the coolest documentaries I've ever seen. Like, I'm obsessed with it. Every time there's a new season that comes out, I'm in it. But there's only, like, 4 episodes per season, so it's kind of a cock tease a little bit.
But yeah, it's important to be a little nostalgic and go back and appreciate the old times.
Yeah, you know? I agree. And then this week, we are actually breaking down the Padrone 1964 Anniversario.
Classic.
It's the Exclusivo Natural.
Classic.
Yeah. So before we actually get into the components of the cigar, Chris, how do we break these bad boys down?
Sure. Each cigar review is broken down into 3 main categories: construction, burn, and flavor. We see if the cigar is worth the price for a possible bonus or deduction. And then finally, we average out our reviews and recommendations so you get the full gist of how amazing this cigar is. Now, maybe that's a preamble. Maybe I'm leading you on. But, I mean, it's Padron. If you haven't heard of Padron and don't appreciate Padron, you're a dumb-dumb.
You're dumb-dumb. I agree. Total dumb-dumb. This cigar came out in 1994. So what I'm curious about in this cigar is, has it stood the test of time? What kind of, like, you think
jumper
about...
Jumper pants were still in, man.
Jumper pants were definitely still in. You and I were wearing sweatpants at school and had both of our ears pierced at this time.
Saved by the Bell, bull cuts, man.
All of it. Everything that was hideous around the 90s happened in, like, 1994. So this is a Nicaraguan Puro. We smoked in a Robusto 5.5x50 box press. I like the box press on a Padron.
I did too.
And it comes in at roughly a $12 price point. There's some variance to that. A lot of people say you can get it for $11. Some people say $13. Split the difference, and we'll say $12. All right, let's get into the breakdown of the cigar itself. Chris, what about the construction on this Padron?
Listen, the 90s was nearly 30 years ago, people. Technically was. Yeah. So, you know, you put 30 years of age on something, you're going to expect a little bit of wrinklage, a little bit of old age creeping in.
Chris, I don't think this one cigar was sitting around for 30 years.
I'm going to believe it. But here's the thing. Funny enough, very wrinkly cap structure. Very wrinkly head. And, but beautiful, you know, aged well, being 30 years
like
old.
Cloris Leachman.
A Cloris Leachman of cigars, for sure. For sure. Wrinkly old head on this one. A little box pressed, a little squishy. You know, as you age, it's expected that muscle tone and definition starts to wane, regardless if you go to the gym. You start to get a little flabby, and I think this cigar represents that well. Dark skin, leathery. Like someone who probably lives in Florida, who chooses not to ever wear sunscreen, with that nice thick tan skin that they've got, you know?
It just looks like Jerry Stiller.
With the bat wings.
Right.
And big old wrinkly Sharpay face, you know? That's what this cigar represents. It represents aging.
Interesting.
And, but that said, with it comes wisdom, you know? And its exquisiteness,
mm-hmm,
and antiquity. And it does that so well from a construction standpoint. It's dark, got some varicose veins running through it, dark varicose veins, with a little bit of grittiness, I want to say. Probably small cluster of moles or impacted pores that are, you think are moles, but are really just blackheads, but that have accumulated over 30 years. But that said, regardless of how old it looks, it's so well put together. The construction on the cigar is great. And I love the Padron branding. It's always been iconic and very consistent. And when you know when you see a Padron, you know what it is. You when you see their cigars from afar, you know exactly what it is. It's a Padron, man. I thought the construction was great, Corey.
Well, that took a while, so let me shorten it up. I like the medium brown color on this cigar. It's actually very appealing. I think it has a nice shelf presence. I'll put it that way. So in terms of Padrons, I think it does stick out. Mine had very thin veins, so nothing protruding overly, like, you know, it's not like the, you know, like a forearm, just fucking veins everywhere. No explosion of veinage. It's a pretty almost flawless box press. That's what I love about this cigar. It's like, it is very boxy. You know how like sometimes box press just looks lazy?
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, it's a box press, but it's oval. This isn't that. This is traditional box press, really boxy, hard edges. It maintained a wonderful cap structure, which sometimes is a little bit difficult, I think, on box presses, but nice, great symmetry to it. I thought structurally it was pretty freaking flawless.
Yeah.
What'd you think about the burn?
I thought the burn was great too. I mean, this little short box press, we've always attributed it to a good airflow and draw when you get a box press more often than not. It was such an effortless draw. It was an easy two puffer for me. Like it took very little effort to get good smoke production. It burned pretty consistently. You had a nice light gray ash consistently throughout. And it was relatively a slow burner. Like, maybe it was the oils in the wrapper or even in the fillers, but the thing was, is it didn't burn quickly or harshly. It was a really pleasant burn experience with zero outages, no issues whatsoever.
Dig it. Outstanding draw. Great smoke production. I agree with you. I think when a box press is done right, it errs more on the side of like airy. This was not something that was like too light in terms of like resistance. It was perfect resistance, great smoke production overall. I really like the burn peak on this. That's something that you and I have paid attention to before, is like when you get that really good peak, which is, you know, there's certain tobaccos that are used that create that nice sharp peak. And this one in a box press peaked really nicely all the way down. So what I love is the fact that everything burned evenly together, as intended. That's always a plus for me. The consistency overall on the cigar, I had no issues with burn, literally nothing. So all the way down to the fingertips, this thing smoked flawlessly.
Hell yeah.
All right, now let's get into arguably the most important part of this review, which is how did this thing taste, right? This is originally created in 1994. There's some subtle differences, probably, obviously, with tobacco growing years over and over, which is hard to maintain a certain level of consistency over a long period of time. So does it stand the test of time? How are the flavors of the cigar, Chris? How did you like it?
Mm. Right off the bat, like, you get a kind of a sharp bitteriness from it, like as soon as you light and take that first sweet draw. And I don't use sweet as a description to flavor, but bitter and like woody, and it actually came with a good amount of spice up front, which I love it a lot. And what's great about it is about 10%, and it does transition a little bit. And what's cool is you get some other flavored notes, and the woodiness and bitterness is always consistent there, but I found myself like getting like leathery notes and even a slight, and I mean slight, creaminess to it. But it does smooth out quite substantially. But it stays consistent, holds right about there where it's just bitter, woody, and kind of leathery, kind of meaty. And dude, it's just like, it's indicative of a Padron, and it was nice to have it in the natural. Because we've always gone Maduros typically on this cigar.
Yep.
But it was pleasant, man. It was solid for a natural, more so than other naturals I would say I've had. And, when you look at Padron producing quality smokes for as long as they have, it holds up. It holds up. I don't know if I like it as much as the Maduro. I will say that.
Bless me.
I don't know if I like it as much.
As 1926?
Yeah. Mm. But damn, is it good though. It's super good.
Yeah.
It like holds up. Holds for 30 up. Years sitting on a shelf. Like it fucking holds up, man.
Could you imagine finding a Padron that had sat on a shelf for 30 years? You'd probably find that at the wharf.
Bro. Probably.
Just covered in an inch of dust. They're like, oh, probably. Shit, this has been here the whole time?
That's blue. That's plume. It's like, no, man, that's nope. Fucking skin and dust. Yep. That's people's dead skin.
There's mites in there. I thought the cigar flavor was pretty amazing. It's very earthy. There is a smoothness to the cigar I like. I also agree that there's like this element of creaminess. I retrohaled a lot of this cigar, and really what I extracted from that is there's like a good bright fruitiness to it. It's almost slightly nutty. There's hints of pepper, but nothing that's overwhelming. Supporting role more than anything, which I like. Not really traditional for a lot of Nicaraguan Puros. But flavor overall, I thought was pretty astounding in this cigar. It's weird, and I'll get to this in the summary of why I appreciate this cigar so much, and then I also make my comparison to the 1926 as well. But really what I want to find out now is that, you know, Padrones typically have an elevated price point. Obviously, Padron has great reputation in the industry, so oftentimes they're going to be elevated in price point, even though they do have more value cigars. But I would argue they're not as good as, you know, when you get into the 1964, the 1926s, and so on, and all the iterations of those. Yeah. But what did you think about the price point overall? This is roughly $12 price of admission.
Dude, I mean, construction's amazing. The burn was exquisitely flawless. And the flavors are so indicative of a good Padron. And there's nothing, I have nothing bad to say about any of the flavor. even when I say with an asterisk, I may prefer the Maduro more, but dude, it's like hard to dispute. It's like they have a reputation to produce such quality cigars that it's hard to scoff at the $12 price point. I mean, it was an hour and 15 minute smoke for me, and I babied it because it's in 1964, and you want to enjoy it. And it just holds up perfectly. It's like there was no surprises or disappointments in it for me. It tasted amazing, and it was a great smoke and experience overall. I'm sitting on the back patio or balcony, sun beating down on me, nice blue sky, birds chirping, fucking one lands on my shoulder. I'm like, hello, bird. Like, it was just a happy fucking experience, man.
That
it
is
was
unique.
Great. So I can't dispute $12 for it. I can't say no, it ain't worth it.
So do you think it is worth it that it doesn't get a bonus for a dolphin?
I think the price is spot on for this cigar.
Yeah, I would agree. I like the price of this cigar. I think it's so appropriate. As a matter of fact, it's kind of weird. You say this, and we've said this about some cigars before, where we're like, you should charge more for this. I don't think you should charge more for this, but I wouldn't be opposed to paying a little bit more for this. Now, I'm not saying, you know, let's take this 1964 anniversary natural and, you know, bump it up to 18, 19 bucks. That's not what I'm saying. But if I saw this on a shelf for 13, 14 bucks and the mood was right, I'd pay it. But I think $12 price point is really appropriate for this cigar. I agree. Mine probably smoked as long as yours did, just over an hour.
Yeah.
And I probably wasn't paying as much because I was under a very, very big time crunch to get it done. So, although I wanted to sit and enjoy it and would have rather probably not smoked it in that time frame, you know, it was what it was. Still didn't waver at all from my expectations. So I do agree that it's worth the price. I would be open to paying a little bit more for it if it was less than this. Holy shitballs, you know, obviously I'd have to give it a bonus. So that being said, let's summarize the cigar. Chris, take us all the way back through.
Take me back 30 years, Corey. Construction, flawless. 10 out of 10. Burn, 20 out of 20, flawless. Nailing it. Flavor, great flavors, man. Great. 26 out of 30. Bonus for price? No, it's appropriately priced. No negatives, no positives. Perfectly priced, in my opinion. Mine comes out at a 93.3%, which is a highly recommended cigar.
Interesting. You ready for this?
Oh, boy. Did you go 95?
10 out of 10 on construction. Thought the construction in this box press was absolutely amazing. Box presses aren't always that easy, and I think the fact that it was as nice as it was and created those really, really symmetrical, sharp edges...
Yeah.
It's always nice. It's very appealing. And I thought, you know, construction overall was pretty amazing, as you would expect in more high-end Padrones. Outstanding draw, great smoke production, perfect burn, flawless, insanely consistent. So 20 out of 20 on burn. Now, really, really enjoyed the flavors of the cigar. Made in 1994 and really hasn't lost any of its appeal. Definitely stood the test of time. One of the things that I really like about smoking Padrones, in particular a 1964 iteration of or a 1926, is that you've got these old school cigars that are staples and they've set the bar in terms of what a cigar should be in the industry. And a lot of people try to mimic what they are. And a lot has happened since 1994. There's different varietals, there's hybrids. There's been a lot of exploration and experimentation over a period of time, and people are making some really fucking good cigars, really good cigars. So it's really nice to reflect back on some of these OGs that have just absolutely been incredible cigars to smoke over such a long period of time. I think what it does for me is it gives me a sense of appreciation. I've been so used to smoking these new age cigars over a long period of time, and it's really nice just to go back to a Padron and go, This is why all this other stuff is where it is.
This, man.
It's the reason all this stuff exists.
Think about how many new brands were likely influenced by smoking a Padron and going, I want to make a cigar like that one day.
I mean, tons. Well, think about it. So on the band of the cigar in that secondary band, there's a serial number. The serial number exists so they can't counterfeit the cigars. You're not going to put that on a cigar if you didn't think there was perhaps an element of people trying to copy or mimic, right? So it's interesting to me, like, I think a lot of people have looked at Padron as a gold standard and not necessarily seek to replicate, but also, but I think more so understand how good a cigar can really be. And I think a lot of people are chasing that. They're chasing that greatness, which is awesome because it only produces more and more better cigars over a long period of time. You get more brands and doing a lot more experimenting, and they're trying to create those gold standards. And it's amazing for the consumer. So, but it's so cool to have a brand like Padron that just doesn't get old. They don't fucking get old. They just, they are staples in the industry and always will be. So I really appreciate the cigar overall. I did not give it a pricing bonus or a delta. Oh, let me go back to my flavor score. So 10 out of 10 on construction, 20, 20 out of burn. Also a 26 out of 30, no bonus delta or the no pricing bonus or delta. Also gives me a 93.3, which we would round down to a 93 overall. Same score. You and I are on the same page again. We finally got back to it.
Hey, we did it.
Because there were some real fucking disparities in some where it was like, Chris was like, it's 95. And I was like, 84. It's terrible. But I think you and I actually appreciate and think very similarly as far as Padron. So I'm not all that surprised by the outcome.
That brand holds a special place in my heart for when you turned 30.
Yeah, that's right. You got me 1926. Yeah, I was 30, 3 years ago.
A special place in my heart that brand does.
Dude, it's hard to argue that they are one of the, and probably always will be, one of the most legitimate brands on the market. And I don't think anyone disputes that either. And so the last thing I'll say is that, you know, I think about the 1926, which I've had more than the 1964, any iteration of the 1964s.
Same.
I think I like this as much, maybe a little bit better. But I need to go back to the 1926. Dude, I loved this fucking cigar.
It's great.
I thought it was really good. I thought it was really, really, it's exceptional. Yeah. So I don't know. I'll see. I kind of want to, I've got a 1926, an iteration of a 1926 downstairs. I may have to smoke it just to do a quick comparison in my head.
We should just do a comparison anyway to see if that old 120-year-old T model fucking cigar fucking holds up against the 90s era Saved by the Bell cigar.
Not a bad idea. Thought it was outstanding. Great fucking cigar.
Could you imagine 120? Could you imagine what a 100-year-old cigar would look like?
Fucking decrepit. It would just be melting.
I feel like it would start to wither away.
It's just like the
down.
Tobacco leaves just break down and just melt. They just turn to mush.
I wonder what, you know, like how people take like flowers and they put them in the middle of books and crush them and let them just like stay there and see what they look like years later. I wonder what would happen if you put like a cigar in a book and crunched it down and let it sit for 100 years. What would that cigar look like?
I wish someone would experiment with that just to see what a cigar produced now would look like in 100 years.
Yeah.
Someone should do that. Get on it.
We should start it right now. Could you imagine at my will? It's like, son, I want you to have my 60-year-old cigar. Don't touch it.
Until it's 100.
I'm doing a scientific study. It must reach 120 years old.
I don't know that much would change. Obviously, I'd say component-wise, it's gonna break down in terms of its construction because there's going to be too many fluctuations in humidity. You had to be in such a controlled environment for it not to start kind of like breaking
apart.
You have
to treat it like the Declaration of Independence and some like sealed.
Yeah, you have to preserve it. Yeah. And like some like vacuum sealed, no air, no oxygen. Yeah. It's not impossible. You could do it.
No.
You could do it. They make those little machines. You could make it happen.
What if I vacuum sealed it and freezered it and just left it there for 100 years?
It would preserve it for sure.
Could you imagine like we found Neanderthals and like old civilizations of people frozen in the ice, and then some apocalyptic event happens in our lifetime, and then all of this shit's lost to time, and then like 1,000 years from now, someone manages to dig up my cigar in a freezer bag.
That'd be crazy.
Like, what is this?
What if they transported like they do organs? you know, and like those fucking CareFlight helicopters and just transporting organs. And it's just your cigar flying around the country so it can get to another freezer. They preserve it where they preserve like bags of blood. It's just your one cigar.
That'd be so great.
That'd be awesome.
What are those space capsules where you
dude,
like,
if you're ever like super rich, you should do that.
That would be amazing.
If you just had a million, just be like, listen, I'm preserving this cigar and it cannot, it's got to be in such a controlled environment that if it gets transported, it's got to go in like, you know, like a Brinks truck that's got a huge ice chest in it.
We should send one into space. You know how they send those capsules like with music and like our languages and like part of our history? Just like send a cigar and just like send it out in a satellite for an alien to find. They're like, what is this?
Well, let's just wait till we create CVAX and we'll send CVAX up there.
Dude, that'd be hilarious.
That'd be awesome. I kind of want to make that cigar, so I'm going to propose that to someone.
Smoke this before you visit. COVID may still be present.
Yeah, up in space, turns into this whole fucking thing. All the aliens get sick. Everyone who colonized Mars just has fucking COVID. Turns them into zombies because of the fucking the oxygen levels and some of the other particulates in the air in Mars metastasize COVID-19 into this fucking nasty infection that causes people to turn to zombies. I could see it happening.
Yeah.
I could see it happening. I can too. You know, one person's little oxygen thing gets cut and the next thing everyone's fucking throwing up blood inside their helmets and shit. We laugh now, but all right, let's end this episode. This concludes episode 197. It's crazy. I went through 197. Check out our show sponsor, My Cigar Pack. www.mycigarpack.com. You can check out their subscription. You can also check out the factory direct stuff as well. Waiting for the components of this month's pack, which of course I'll post on social media when it comes in. I heard it's a real banger. So hopefully it's a good one this month. You can also visit our website, www.hotticketweekly.com. Did a review this week that you can see here. What was it? What did I do? Oh, I did the Romacraft, ironically enough, Neanderthal. So I did that this week. So you can check that out on the website and all the other goodies, podcasts, reviews, and more. It's all housed on the website. Also, make sure you subscribe to YouTube. And you can subscribe. It's going to be somewhere this way or this way. So subscribe on YouTube. Leave us some fucking comments. You know, let us know what you think about this 1964 natural anniversary Padron cigar. Let us know what you think about it. Does it stand the test of time? Is it worth the price?
What do you call a caveman that does nothing but walking? A Neanderthal.
Jesus Christ. Oh man, the quippy dad jokes on here are really, really, I mean, they're starting to flourish. That's great.
Yours was amazing last week.
Still forget what it was. Don't even remember it now. I remember repeating it to Lauren and she even was like, that's fucking good. And I was like, it felt good in the moment.
It was good. It was good.
All right, that's what we got to do. One dad joke per episode off the top of the head.
All right.
All right, let's get the fuck out of here. This concludes episode 197. We'll be back at you next week with episode 198. See you, everyone. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the podcast. We greatly appreciate it. Let me tell you how you can get a hold of us. You can get a hold of myself at the Hot Ticket Pod on Instagram. You can get a hold of Chris at Hot Ticket Chris on Instagram as well. You can find this podcast. It is available all over the place. You can find it on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. And you can find the podcast available on video on YouTube. Look up The Hot Ticket Weekly on YouTube, and you can watch all the fun happen before your eyes. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes if you could. And check out our show sponsor, My Cigar Pack, at www.mycigarpack.com. Again, thanks for listening. We'll be back at you next week.